Hey, fellow boundary breakers. If your current delegation systems are not working to get you out of the day-to-day in your business, there is an exercise on our website that is the first step to get you out of the delegation catch-22. I'm going to throw the link in the show notes for you to go ahead and download. A results-oriented workplace is where you are actually more focused on outcomes, output, performance, momentum, movement, then you are focused on what your employees are doing, how they are spending their time, what the tasks are that they are doing, and how many hours they are actually working for you. Welcome to another episode of Female Founders Breaking Boundaries. I'm your host, Casey Gromer. I am the founder of She Suite Boutique. With over 20 years of marketing and business management experience, I work with small businesses and female founders using our signature business blueprint. On the show, you get tools, advice, resources, support, and encouragement that resonates with the modern businesswoman. So, fellow boundary breakers, let's dive in. Hello, boundary breakers, and welcome to a new episode of Female Founders Breaking Boundaries. I'm your energetic host today, Casey Gromer, and you are listening to the podcast that challenges the societal boundaries that are placed on us as women entrepreneurs. And today we're going to talk about some different ways that we can build a business that bypasses these boundaries and eventually runs without us. If you are a returning listener, thank you so much for tuning in. And if you are new here, welcome. I hope you enjoy today's episode. I haven't asked this in a while, and I am just going to put a call out because we have had a lot of new listeners lately. So thank you for listening. And I am wondering if you would be willing to go out to wherever you listen to podcasts, which my data tells me that the majority of you are actually listening on Apple Podcasts. So if you would go out to your podcast platform and go ahead and leave us a quick rating and review. We have been climbing the charts in podcast popularity, and all of those listens and ratings and reviews helps us get found by more women who are looking for this type of content like you. We have an exciting episode today. I am going to be introducing you to Allison Robinson of The Mom Project. We are going to be talking about creating a results-oriented company culture. And we're going to wrap up the episode. I'm not going to tell you what the topic is, but we're going to wrap up with a few thoughts on what's on my mind outside of business. But first, let's begin the episode like we begin any other episode, and let's celebrate another female founder who's out there breaking boundaries and paving the way for the rest of us. Allison Robinson, she is the founder of The Mom Project. Now, The Mom Project is a digital talent platform. It is not the first of its kind. There are many digital talent platforms out there. And if you are wondering what I mean by a digital talent platform, we are talking about an online space where people who are looking for projects or work can congregate, and people who are looking to hire for projects or work can find them and engage with them and hopefully fill an open position. So The Mom Project is a digital talent platform, and they are connecting women with flexible job opportunities. And the idea is that it's a win-win for both parties, because we talk about this a lot on the podcast, but women have a different set of needs when it comes to careers and the working world than their male counterparts. So women are getting access to companies who are looking for flexible work, which might be a new idea for some of these companies. And then companies are also able to fill gaps in their business with hard to find talent, because let's face it, it is not always easy to know where to find people who are only looking for 20 hours of work a week, who are looking to only work evenings or weekends or things like that. So that's what the Mom Project platform is for. Some of the mission of the Mom Project is helping women who've maybe left the workforce to raise children or have babies, helping them slowly kind of return to work. And this is something I did. I did not come back to work full time when I decided that I was not going to stay at home with my kids anymore. I kind of eased into it very slowly. The Mom Project also believes in maternity ship, where once you become pregnant, you don't actually become an invalid. And this platform is great for freelance talent or contingent talent, which means maybe I want to work on a 6-month project and then be done. They also do direct hiring. They are big into diversity initiatives and returnships. And a returnship is just, like I mentioned before, where you are ready to jump back into the working world, but you come in for a set period of time. It's usually for somebody who is more skilled in a certain area of labor. I did this also for a while, way back in the day, where I worked on short-term projects like 6 months or 12-month projects, filling a gap on maybe a corporate project that was not going to last. So like an implementation or a campaign launch or something like that. So that is the Mom Project. Now, Allison specifically started the Mom Project after her first child was born in 2015, and she joined the rest of us who are moms in understanding how challenging it can be for American mothers to juggle the demands of motherhood with a full-time career. Welcome to our world, right? So that's when she came up with the idea of the Mom Project to help women stay engaged in the workforce, but on a different set of terms than was maybe realistically known already out there. Hello, breaking boundaries. So the Mom Project launched in 2016. It has now grown to a community over 650,000 women and has supported 3,000 companies across the United States, including mega companies like Amazon, Etsy, Meta, which is the new Facebook, Best Buy, Logitech, and more. And if you are interested in, and I would highly recommend this, if you are in the market for hiring and are looking for some of this kind of freelance, contingent, returnship type talent or part-time talent, I would highly recommend you check out themomproject.com and see if there is a talented, skilled woman out there to fill your needs. Now, one of the things I want to point out is that on this platform, you are probably going to find more skilled labor because these are women who have been in the workforce, have experience, and maybe have had higher profile jobs and have left the workforce to have children and are now coming back. So they're not unskilled or switching careers or things like that. Now, all of the links to find and connect with the Mom Project will be in the show notes. So I do encourage you to give them a peek. It is time to get to the content today. And before we do that, I'm just going to let you know it is pretty much almost winter here in Minnesota. The temperature has not gotten even up to 40 for the last couple of days. But oddly enough, I have located a wasp in my office. He is, there he is. He is just kind of flying around, making himself at home. I do not know how he is surviving this cold, but if you hear a shriek and a crash and something like that, you will know that he has gotten a little bit too close to me. But we're going to try to keep on trucking and kind of see if we can keep our separate ends of the office here. Okay, what we're going to be talking about today is creating a results-oriented company culture. And you might be asking yourself, what does that even mean? And I'm going to explain that by describing how I came up with this topic for the day. A couple of things we have talked about on the podcast in the past have been toxic productivity. So we're going to touch on that a little bit today. And then I know I have mentioned before an example of a couple of clients I have worked with in the past who were more concerned with the hours their employees were working than what the employees were actually doing in those hours that they worked. So that's how I'm going to describe results-oriented. So results-oriented would be the opposite of those things, where we are more interested in the output of what's happening with our team members than how they are spending their time. So examples of a not results-oriented workplace, and some of the reasons that I decided to talk about this today is it's been coming up. Toxic productivity is one of the reasons that this idea came to mind. Toxic productivity in my mind, and I was not able to find any factual research to back up this statement, but in my experience, in my qualitative experience, toxic productivity gets its origins from the corporate environment, where you have the idea of corporate greed and where anything for the sake of a dollar kind of mentality really dictates that we are working our employees to the bone in order to keep our costs down and increase our output, which then leads to more money. This is typically common in environments where there's some sort of power grab or power-hungry people in command. There is also typically some ethical issues, but so much of this has been going on over the years, which we are seeing it kind of correct itself these days, but so much of this has been going on in this corporate environment over the years that many, many, many of us in society have kind of adopted this mindset, and it has become a standard way of thinking. And I refer to this very often, and especially in this podcast, as hustle culture, where if you aren't grinding and slaving away and working yourself to the bone, you are not growing, you are not producing, and you are not successful. And hell no, you don't deserve to be successful unless you have pretty much run yourself ragged into the ground. So toxic productivity is one of the things that's happening with some of the businesses out there that is holding them back from getting results. Another example I want to share with you is one of my first positions out of college. I was working for a company, I'm not naming any names, but I was working for a company where the CEO, which I will let you know, he was a good old boy and part of a good old boy network, his office had this giant window that looked out over the parking lot and, of course, the front entryway. And he would literally watch his employee. And this was a rather big company. So there's probably like at least 180 or more employees in this company. And he would watch people walk in the door and walk out the door, and he would notice if they were walking at 8:05 or leaving at 4:55. He would notice those things. So that was an issue. And then one more example I'm going to give you is actually of a client of mine. As we were working on building her team and on developing accountability and workflow and all of this, there were a couple of positions within her accountability chart where she was more concerned with how many hours her team member was working versus what that team member was actually doing while he was at work. And so she would say, I don't care if there's nothing for him to do. He needs to be on the phone calling somebody. I don't care who it is. I don't care what the outcome of the call is, but he needs to be calling somebody. And that was definitely not a beneficial way of looking at that. And we're going to talk about why. Obviously, there is a healthy way and an unhealthy way to approach productivity in your business. And here are a few things I want to mention that you can look for in your own business as signs that maybe you might be focused on the wrong thing. Sometimes I come across clients who have unreasonable expectations of their team members. And this might look like expecting employees or team members to respond rather immediately to any form of communication, whether it's an email, a text, an instant message, something like that. Or maybe they are expecting team members or employees to respond at all hours. So if I send a message at 7 o'clock at night, I am actually expecting a response before the night is over. This is unreasonable, and it's probably an unhealthy expectation. Another example is one that I've already explained. If you are more concerned with how many hours that your employees are working rather than whether their work is actually adding value, this might be an issue. And this is actually more relative to employees. So if you're paying somebody a salary and you are more concerned with whether they are actually working 40 hours a week so that you can get your money's worth out of them, we need to talk. Now, for an hourly employee or a freelancer who is only charging you for the hours they are working, this might not be necessarily as applicable. If you are expecting your team members to work extra hours consistently, so maybe we're asking them to work 50 or 60 hours a week, or we're asking them to work every night into their evening hours, this is an unhealthy, unreasonable expectation. And another sign, a sure sign that you might be focused on the wrong thing, if your employees are productive and working hard, but your company is not producing results, or the results are showing a different story, you might want to take a look at your company's productivity. So, how are we actually going to create a results-oriented workplace? What does a results-oriented workplace even look like? I think there's a lot of different definitions out there, and a results-oriented workplace might look different based on what industry you are in, based on the size of your business, based on if you're remote or in person, those kinds of things. But to me, a results-oriented workplace is where you are actually more focused on outcomes, output, performance, momentum, movement, then you are focused on what your employees are doing, how they are spending their time, what the tasks are that they are doing, and how many hours they are actually working for you. So how do we create an environment where we are more focused on results and output and value add? And here's how we're going to do that. First, it is incredibly important to start with setting goals. You cannot have results if you don't have something to compare those results to. And in order to create those benchmarks and track against those results, you have to have a goal. You have to know what direction you're headed and what you actually want to achieve to understand whether you are actually achieving results. And just want to give a quick mention here. I just did one of these last week, but I did a CEO day for a client where we spent the day doing their strategic planning, where we mapped out what their goals for the next year should actually be based on the results they were hoping to achieve. So we mapped out their annual goals, their quarterly goals, we assigned accountability. We assigned milestones so they could track their progress, and we also created a budget. So I will tell you in a little bit how you can get yourself hooked up with that. But that would be a great place to start if you are wanting to focus on results, is setting up a strategic planning session with me. Accountability is another key factor in creating a results-oriented workplace. And accountability means that you understand or you are defining what is required to get you to your goals, and then who is responsible for making sure that happens. So once you have your goals set, you're going to know what has to occur in order for you to get from where you are now to where you want to end up. And once you know that, you make sure that somebody is taking responsibility for getting you to that goal. And then we have tracking, which is how you are going to give real-time feedback to those people who are accountable to getting you to those goals. And this tracking is going to keep your people focused on the most important activity or the value add activity. So in an example that I gave of the former client who was more concerned with, you know, if the person had nothing to do, that they were then getting on the phone and making calls, in that situation, we're looking at what the person is doing, and making calls is actually not adding any value. It's just busy work so that he looks busy, like he's doing something. And if we had accountability and some sort of tracking mechanism where we could measure the outcome or measure the performance of the activity of what he was supposed to be doing, we would be able to make sure that he was focused on doing the things that matter most versus spending his time on the phone, which we knew from our tracking was not producing results. Another plug is tracking and accountability. Now, tracking is really what we use our scorecard for. And I'm going to tell you what episode you can listen back to understand exactly what is a scorecard and what goes into the scorecard. That was episode 45. I think I even called it Keeping Score. So that is the episode that's going to explain all about the scorecard and the tracking. And also, this is another CEO day that I offer. So if you are wanting to make sure that your team members are not only doing the most value add thing for your business and then measuring how effective they are at doing those things, but also make sure you have the right people and that you are doing the right things, we have a CEO day for that. And in a little bit, I will tell you how you can get hooked up with one of those CEO days. Here's a few other things that you can do to make sure that you have a results-oriented company culture, and that is to reward positive direction or positive movement. So if your team members are doing what they're supposed to be doing and they are adding value to the company, do you have any sort of rewards system in place to make sure that you're patting them on the back and saying, good job? Thank you so much. That is a sure way to make sure that your team members are going to be more than happy to contribute to the success of your business. Systems and processes are also, in a roundabout way, a perfect tool to help you create a results-oriented company culture. If you understand what is required to maintain the day-to-day of the business and to maintain the momentum of the business, you need to document it and you need to make sure that it's getting done the right way every time. This is going to improve your efficiency. It's going to improve your productivity. It's going to reduce the number of hours typically that needs to be worked in most cases, because you're going to have everything figured out and documented and efficiently presented to your team members. And finally, if you're thinking about your company culture and toxic productivity, we obviously want to do everything we can to make sure that we do not have a toxic work culture. And so your goal here with creating or moving in more of a direction of a results-oriented company culture is to reduce burnout. Because obviously when we're focused on productivity and hours worked and not really giving people time to focus on themselves, they're going to get burnt out. And when they get burnt out, they're not going to perform. They're going to show up at work and they're going to be tired and they're going to be fatigued and they're going to be stressed. They're going to be thinking about other things. They're not going to be motivated and they're not going to do their best work for you, even though you're paying them money. You can also focus on the mental health of your team members. And focusing on mental health is obviously going to help reduce burnout. And then finally, promoting self-care, which is going to lead to better mental health. And these things might look like your time off policies, your flexible working schedules, having time for employees to communicate or have team building activities or encouraging them to take time for family activities. Those kinds of things are going to be important in improving productivity and creating results in your company. Okay, now here's some reasons why you might prefer to move in the direction of a results-oriented workplace. One of the obvious reasons is your performance and your growth are going to be impacted. If you're focusing on tasks versus output, yeah, your tasks might be getting done, but they might not be doing anything for you. But if you're focused on output and results, you're going to make sure that whatever work you are getting done is contributing to the direction you're wanting the business to move. It's a great way to provide clarity and focus to your team members. So when they're showing up to work, they're not thinking about these are the tasks I have to do today. They're asking themselves, what is it that I need to focus on today in order to help me achieve the thing that I need to achieve for my job? Results-oriented workplaces are going to run more efficiently. You're going to have improved productivity, which means more output in less amount of time. You're going to have higher employee satisfaction, which is roundabout going to improve your productivity. And then you're going to have role clarity. So if you've done all the things that I've suggested that you do, your employees and your team members are going to know exactly where their time needs to be focused when they are at work. So they're not wasting their time on busy work or things that don't matter. So that's going to create some space and some balance for them to then have time for this mental health and self-care activity. Finally, results-oriented workplaces, you're getting real-time feedback. So if you are tracking like you're supposed to be tracking and you're noticing that the results that you're looking for are not happening or are happening, that's real-time feedback. So you're not waiting until the end of the year to give your employees feedback on how they're doing. They know how they're doing. They know every week or every month exactly how they're doing because they're focused on what they're supposed to be doing and the output they're producing. So this is one of the reasons I love this system for getting results. So that's how you can create a results-oriented company culture. And I'm curious if you are doing any of these things right now. And if you think about your business and how you are operating and how you are functioning as a team, are there any changes that you can incorporate in the short term or in the long term that are going to shift the mindset of your team into what am I doing today versus what results am I going to be getting today? Let's talk really quick before we jump into what's on my mind outside of business into how you can get some support in moving you and your team and your business into that results-oriented company culture. I mentioned two services that we offer. We have strategic planning services, and then we have your creating your accountability and measuring performance service. Both of those, I highly recommend doing a CEO day with us. And what a CEO day is just you and your team, your leadership team, blocking off a day. It's usually from 10 to 4, or we can be flexible around there, but it's usually a 6-hour day. And when you leave that CEO day, you are going to have a complete budget and strategic plan all mapped out for you so you would know exactly what you are doing for the next year and the next 90 days and who is doing it and where the budget is coming from. Or you're going to have your entire accountability chart mapped out so that you know who's doing what and what they should be focused on in order to make the business grow and how you're going to be measuring whether they're doing the right things and whether it's working. So we have actually had some people even break those into half days, which I am happy to work with you on. And the way to get signed up for or to find out if this might be a good fit for you is to hop on just a quick 30 to 45 minute call with me to talk about what that service looks like and whether it would be the best fit for you and how we can support you. You can go to our website at c-suiteboutique.com and you can, right on our Contact Us tab, you can book a call with me at whatever time is convenient for you, and you don't even have to email me back and forth to try to get on the calendar. And I will be happy to chat with you whether we can support you or not. I think now it is time to talk about what's on my mind outside of business. I have subscribed to an organization. I get information from an organization called Marshall Plan for Moms. It is founded by Rejma Sajani, and she wrote a series of books called Girls Who Code, which is also an organization, Girls Who Code. And in the email that I received from her, she explained that her book series, Girls Who Code, was put on a book ban list in some of our country's schools. And I did some further research on this. It is true. It is an ongoing kind of battle about these book ban lists. And I'm sure this is not the first time that you're hearing about books getting put on a ban list in the last couple of years. But the reason I wanted to talk about it today is because I have some questions. First, I want to cover what Girls Who Code is so you get an understanding of why this is even happening. Girls Who Code, the organization, is intended to teach girls to code. And it doesn't specifically say this, I think. I don't know, but maybe it does. But Girls Who Code is, first of all, we know that coding and girls is kind of a new concept. Girls in STEM, all of this stuff. Women and girls have been way behind in getting resources and focus on sort of these STEM-related activities. And so Girls Who Code was really encouraging girls to take on coding and to learn how to do it, and especially more diverse populations. So the book series follows a group of girls who become friends when they join the girls, or I'm sorry, when they join the school's coding club. So the book was banned in a few schools. The article I read was focusing specifically on a school district in Pennsylvania, but I think there were several other schools who were talking about this as well. The conservative group who is interested in banning these books sort of pointed out that they were concerned that the book was focused more on activism and indoctrination than on education and was distracting kids from learning by introducing them to these ideas and concepts that might be trying to steer them one way or another. Indoctrination, in case you're not familiar with that term, which most of you probably are, but in case you're not, basically indoctrination is when you're presenting ideas to a group or teaching a group to accept a set of beliefs intrinsically. So you're kind of reducing their critical thinking and just telling them something or educating them about something that they are going to then kind of accept without question. Now, the argument against banning these books is that it's racist, first of all, and sexist. So just so you know, I did pull up some research on this, and of all the books that have been either banned or threatened to be banned in the last few years, 41% of those banned books have some sort of theme of LGBTQ in them, and 40% of them have a main character or secondary character who is a person of color. So we definitely have some sort of sexist, racist themes going on in here. Here are some of the questions I have about banning books. And these questions may not surprise you. But my first question is, should banning books even be allowed? I mean, we're talking about free speech here. We're talking about learning and education. And obviously, there are some really bad books out there, right? There are some books out there that are not only bad, but there are books out there that are inaccurate. There are books out there that are have themes that are unhealthy. And there's all kinds of stuff out there. But should books be banned? I don't know. I suppose there's probably a fine line between whether books should be banned or not banned. But then we have this question that I am constantly bringing up of who then has the power to determine what books should be banned and what books shouldn't be banned. I think this is just such a tricky, tricky, wavy, gray line. And the second question I have is, to the argument that these books are indoctrination, my question is, isn't indoctrination what's been happening to society for hundreds of years? I mean, if I think back to the textbooks, and these were like textbooks, not even just reading books, but textbooks that I was presented and taught from when I was in elementary and middle school, aren't those indoctrination? I mean, the history of what has happened in the U.S. was presented to us in one way, and yet we come to find out that there are other perspectives and other experiences of the history of things that was not included in these books. So isn't that indoctrination when we are presenting, you know, one perspective or one experience and expecting people to accept it at face value? Just a question. And then who gets to decide what's appropriate material? I think that's a tricky slope right there. And then another argument or question I have is censorship, which is what this is. Do I think that kids should have access to any and every book known to society? I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe not. I'm not sure, honestly. But when we start censoring things, doesn't that discourage critical thinking that allows us to read something and process something and ask questions and say, is this true? Is this realistic? How do I feel about this topic or idea? You know, where are the facts that support this? That kind of thing. So if we're censoring things, we are losing the opportunity to develop critical thinking, which to me is the whole point of what education should be teaching our kids to begin with. So I guess I don't know if I have an answer to this, but I definitely kind of felt like this book series, Girls Who Code, being censored was extreme in that some of the ideas and concepts in the series were beneficial. They're beneficial to women and girls. They're beneficial to our movement toward diversity. And if you agree with me that this is not something that should be happening in our schools right now, you can go support Girls Who Code by going out to Amazon and buying the books and sharing them with your daughters who might be interested in STEM or who might want to learn more about it so they can decide if they're interested in it or not. You can also follow Marshall Plan for Moms, which we will have the links in the show notes. Marshall Plan for Moms is a national movement, and it is centered around mothers. And the idea is that by focusing on moms, we are focused on our economic recovery, especially from the pandemic. And the value that's placed on our labor, which I talk about here, and labor not only in terms of what we're actually out there in the workplace doing, but the invisible labor that we are providing to society each and every day. Marshall Plan for Moms advocates for both public and private sector changes that are going to expand choices for us as women and remove barriers to equality. And one of the reasons that we actually support Marshall Plan for Moms financially, a portion of our annual profits is donated to Marshall Plan for Moms, is because they are one of the most vocal that I could find in trying to find solutions for the childcare crisis, which I am extremely passionate about fixing here at C-Suite Boutique. Honey, what is it that you wanted to tell our listeners today?
Get out there and break some boundaries and do it for me and my generation.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Female Founders Breaking Boundaries. If you enjoyed this episode, would you be willing to leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're tuning in? You can connect with me on LinkedIn using the link in the show notes. And until next week, don't be afraid to get out there and break some boundaries.